Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I know we have a lot of new people here today and people who do not usually come. So I'm glad that you all are here, that you were able to make it. This is a welcoming congregation, so we are accepting of all sorts of people here. If you are new today, could you raise your hand for me? Okay, I think this is maybe too many people to pass around and have you introduce yourselves. We would be here all day. So after the service is over, we are having snacks in the kitchen over there, and you're welcome to stay, have some coffee, meet some people, and everyone would be very happy to get to know you. We do have one announcement this morning that is not in the order of service. You can check out the rest of those announcements that we have on the inside of the order of service, but we have one from Scott Tonona.
Good morning, everybody. I'm chair of the board here, and it is not our standard operating procedure anymore to have announcements from people other than the convener, but I just wanted to briefly tell you all that for those of you who know, we had a consultant come in a month and a half ago now, and the board has decided to move forward with some of the recommendations. One of them in particular is on vision setting, and we've targeted February for a goal for us to have completed a vision setting process for the fellowship. There is information in my message in the newsletter, so if you don't normally read that, I'd ask you to please do read that. Just to let you know briefly what we're going to be doing is inviting people. It's the process that's more important than the final product. And what we're going to be doing is inviting people to be engaging in many, many conversations about what's important to us, what we want to accomplish in the future, and things like that. And for those of you who are new, I do invite you to, if you like what you see here or you like the people who are here, get more involved. And you can be involved in this process, too. Thanks.
For our music during the service today, we're going to do a series of chants. The chants themselves are in the teal hymnal, but you're not going to need to have a copy because they're very short, they're very simple, and we are going to teach them to you one by one. The first one that we're going to do is number 1069, Ancient Mother. And those of you who know this one, if you would join in, that would be awesome. Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I hear your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears. Ancient Mother, service today, we are going to follow a tradition that is common among many pagans of calling the quarters, which are the four elements, the four cardinal directions. And if you would all stand and face the direction as we call it, that's kind of the tradition of how it's done. Element of air, I call to you and ask that you bless us in our gathering. Now Now turn to the south. Element of fire, I call to you and ask that you bless us in our gathering. Now to the west. Element of water, I call to you and ask that you bless us in our gathering. And last to the north. Element of earth, I call to you and ask that you bless us in our gathering. Oh, these are like soaked with oil. I'm going to kill myself. Thank you. Hear the words of the star goddess, whose feet are the hosts of heaven, whose body encompasses the universe. I, whom the beauty of the green earth, the white moon among the stars, and the mystery of the waters, I call upon your soul to arise and come unto me. For I am the soul of nature that gives life to the universe. From me all things proceed, and unto me they must return. Let my worship be in the heart that rejoices, for behold, all acts of love and pleasure are my rituals. Let there be beauty and strength, power and compassion, honor and humility, mirth and reverence within you. And for you who seek to know that your seeking and yearning will avail you not unless you know the mystery. For if that which you seek you find not within yourself, you will never find it without. For behold, I have been with you from the beginning, and I am that which is attained at the end of desire. Now I'm going to have the children come forward for the children's story, The Stonecutter. Oh, wow, you have ruby slippers. Those are fancy.
Once upon a time, in a small village, there lived a stonecutter. All day long, he worked hard cutting the stones in shapes that his customers needed. His hands were hard, and his clothes were dirty. One day, he was working hard on a large stone, which was tough work under the blazing summer sun. He worked for several hours before he decided to take a nap under a tree. He was awoken by the sound of a procession of people coming. There were many soldiers and attendants, as well as onlookers. In the middle of the procession was a carriage which housed the king. How wonderful it must be to be a great king, thought the stonecutter. How happy I'd be if I were a king instead of a poor stonecutter. As he said these words, a strange thing happened. The stonecutter found himself dressed in silk clothes and dripping with shining jewels. His hands were soft, and he was sitting in a comfortable carriage. He looked through the curtains and thought, how easy it is to be king. These people are here for me. The procession moved on, and the sun grew hotter and hotter. The stonecutter, now the king, became too warm for comfort. He asked the procession to stop so he could rest in the shade for a while. At once, the chief of all the soldiers bent before the king and said, Your Majesty, only this morning you told me I had to have you back to the castle by sunset. The stonecutter felt sorry for him and allowed the procession to continue. As the afternoon continued, the sun grew hotter and hotter and hotter, and the stonecutter, now the king, grew more and more uncomfortable. I am powerful, it is true, but look at how more powerful the sun is. Said the king, I think I would rather be the sun. At once he became the sun, shining down upon the earth. His new power, it was hard to control. He wasn't a very good son. He was shown much too strongly. He burned all the fields of berries, and he turned the ocean into vapors, which formed a great cloud over all the land. He tried and he tried, but no matter how hard he shone, he just couldn't see through the cloud. It was obvious to him at this point that maybe the cloud might be stronger than he. So then the stonecutter, who was now the sun, wished he was a cloud. He found himself turned into that huge, dark cloud. He started using his newfound power. He thundered and he poured down all over the villages. Soon he had flooded all the fields, and all the rivers overflowed their banks. He changed all the lands with his floods, except the boulder he had once been cutting. It was unchanged, and it was unmoved. He rained until he had no more to rain, yet still the boulder would not budge. "Why, that rock is more powerful than I am," said the stonecutter, now a cloud. "Only a great stonecutter could transform and change that boulder with a skill. How I wish I were a stonecutter again." As soon as he had finished thinking it, he found himself sitting on the stone with his hard, rough hands and his dirty clothes under that hot summer blazing sun. He picked up his tools, and at once he started work on the boulder. Now he was the happiest stonecutter in all the land, for he found what was important. Did you guys like that story?
Yeah?
Yeah? Yeah? You like Rapunzel better? That's fair.
I like Legos.
I like Legos too. You can build all sorts of stuff with Legos.
Can we go to
our
time?
Holding too much stuff. All right. During the offering, we're going to sing the second one of those chants for you. It's number 1070. If you pick it up and you feel like you can sing it while passing the basket around, please join us.
Mother, I feel you under my feet. Mother, I hear your
sit down. So the program that we have for you today is called Pagan Voices. And the reason for that is because we are going to have several different people speak. And the reason for that is that paganism is so diverse that I really don't feel that any one person could cover everything that's important about it in a way that's fair to all the people who fall under the umbrella of pagan. My name is Sarah Burns. I have come here at times in the past. I have been a pagan for a little over 10 years, and at one point I was the president of the Pagan Student Group at Kansas State. And when we started the Pagan Student Group, we had to come up with a definition of paganism to put into our constitution so that we knew what our group was about, which was a very difficult process. What we ended up coming up with is, pagan is an umbrella term for a wide variety of earth-centered and or polytheistic religions which draw their inspiration from the pre-Christian religious traditions of various cultures. And the and or is actually really important because there are pagan traditions that aren't polytheistic. They're monistic or animistic or panentheistic, or for whatever reason they just don't see the gods as being separate beings that exist. There are also pagan traditions that wouldn't call themselves earth-centered. They're focused on the historical religion of their ancestors, or they're focused on practicing magic or something like that that doesn't match the notion of being an earth-centered religion. At times, it does feel like really the only thing that pagans have in common is the word pagan. So what I'm going to have happen today is we have five people, including myself, who are pagan and who are going to speak about their own experience of being a pagan, speak about what their tradition is, what their background is, or tell something about what paganism means to them. And my hope is that by hearing from those different people, you'll get a sense of what it means to be a pagan, you know, what that word means in our society today. And then after that, we are going to have an opportunity for you to ask questions. So the first person to come up is going to be Ralph Romig, who is the chieftain of Tyr's Helm tribe.
Hello, everyone. Like she said, I'm Ralph Romig, chieftain of Tyr's Helm tribe. We pretty much refer to ourselves as heathens, which means specifically heathenry is the contemporary revival of historical Germanic paganism. heathens honor the gods of Northern Europe specifically. They are what we refer to as hard polytheists. That means we do consider each of the gods to be separate and unique individuals. There's a strong emphasis on honor and within our belief structure. And I lost my place, I'm sorry. Some of those examples of honor are gleaned from our lore that we look to for our sources, which are the poetic Eddas and sagas of Iceland and other literature like that. An example of those type of virtues are courage, truth, honor, fidelity, discipline, hospitality, self-reliance, industriousness, and perseverance. And these are kind of a modern invention that were gleaned from those sources I spoke of. I'm kind of trying to shorten my presentation, so we're limited on time. But our tradition definitely has its own unique worldview and cosmology. And the principal beings within that cosmology are three distinct sets of deities. One is the Aesir, which mostly pertain to the sphere of human society. They govern the arts, force, law, wisdom, and etc. The Vanir are another race of gods that embody more forces of nature. For example, fertility, beauty, and things like that. The Jotuns, or the giants, are more elemental, chaotic forces which the gods interact with and sublimate in their creative action of shaping reality. We have some unique views on how we look at life in that worldview. One of those is referred to as weird, W-Y-R-D. It's from the Proto-Indo-European root, which means to turn or to rotate. Weird means to come to pass, to become, and to be due. And weird is ruled by the Norns. We believe that the Norns weave our fate, if you will, at the base of the Yggdrasil, the world tree that our world, Midgard, hangs on. The Norns' names are Urd, which means that which has come to pass, Verdandi, that which is in the process of happening now, and Skuld, which means to owe. While not fatalistic, because weird is shaped by ongoing action, the future is always shaped to a certain degree by the threads of the past. Weird is the fabric woven by our actions as we move through life. We do have different varying beliefs, even within heathenry specifically, that we have in the afterlife. One, which is probably the one most of you have heard of, is Valhalla. It's the hall of the slain. Those who die in battle would go there. But there are also various other beliefs. Some believe you just go to your ancestral hall once you pass beyond the veil. Some believe you reincarnate into your own line after you die. However, afterlife's not really as big a focus within heathenry as it's beyond our control. We don't really control what happens or when it happens. So we're more focused on living a good life and living with virtue and the good deeds that we do while we're here on this plane. The main rituals of heathenry that are reconstructed and modern are the blot, which stems from the word, it's the same word that blood comes from, because it stems from the practice of when you were on a farm raising farm animals, that you would kill one of the animals to eat, and then you would give its blood to the gods, and you would be sprinkled the assembled people there. It kind of sounds strange to us today, you know. But that's actually where the word blessing comes from, is from the Anglo-Saxon bletsunga, which means to besprinkle. We don't really practice that as much today. Some groups do, but because most of us don't come from that, from the farm background, most of us live here in the cities, and so we use mead most of the time, and we put it in a drinking horn, and we offer it up to the gods. And killing an animal for most of us is kind of a foreign concept, so we don't do that. The other main ritual is called sumbul, and it's a type of fate-weaving ritual. It consists of three rounds, and the first round, you would have the mead in the horn, and you would say certain words over the horn, words to your deities, to your gods. In the second round, you would raise the horn and toast to your ancestors or your heroes. And the third round would be a round where you can boast of deeds that you have accomplished in this life. You can make oaths, which are a very important aspect of what we do, because those build bonds between people and sometimes between groups of people. Gift giving is also an appropriate thing to do in the third round. There are, as Sarah said, in our tradition, there are magic practices within our tradition, but they're not the main focus. There's what we call sedh. It means seership. There's also what we call spay, which is more different kind of magic incantations and whatnot. Or there's also galdr, which is you would sing or chant the runes. Some of the sources for what we do in modern sumbul, a good example is in Beowulf, when you see him go into Hrothgar's hall and he's talking about his ancestry and the deeds he's accomplished. And it's, I think, in modern from what we've seen of it, like in the movies, it seems kind of ridiculous, these great things that he's done, but it kind of sets precedent for speaking about the deeds that you've accomplished. And that's often seen as one of the most sacred of rituals, is the sumbul. I think that's about all I had. Like I said, the sources for that are the Eddas and sagas of our Icelandic and ancestors. And we're very focused on not only honoring the gods, but honoring our ancestors and the spirits of the land also. Sarah? Oh, Larry, I'm sorry. Larry Porter's going to speak to you guys a bit. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Larry Porter, and I'm a Druid. This path I started probably back when I was about 12 years old, but just didn't know it at the time. The word Druid always meant something to me. It had a calling. But when I got back from Iraq in 2003 the first time, I went on the internet and did a search for Druid, found a site in England. And I was reading that site. It was just like coming home. Druidism isn't a revealed religion. There's no dogma. There's no Bible. It could be a religion or a philosophy. Some Druidism are monotheist, polytheist, animist, which basically means they either believe in just a creator or a great spirit. Some of us believe that there is a god and goddess. Some of us think that nature is divine. Well, all of us think that nature is divine, but that nature is the divinity around us, that that's the only face that it has. We believe that they are another world, that when we end this saga, in this chapter, that we are being, you know, there are other worlds we go to for rest and to review the lessons we've learned here. And then we come back. And Judaism was a Celtic belief, and that was one reason why the Romans had so much trouble defeating the Celts. They had no fear of death because they're coming back. The three goals of Judaism is wisdom, creativity, and love. In order to do that, we see an interconnectedness with nature, with the trees, with the animals. We feel that we are not alone. We are part of a web. What we do influences other things, and what other things do influence us. How we do this living in the world, or how I do it, we plant things, we tend things, we try to make things grow, and I always try to have a positive attitude. If anyone walks up on the street, most of the time I'm happy, in a good mood. I had one person tell me that he didn't know how I could stay in a good mood when everything was going crazy around us. But that's, yeah, that's one of the outlooks that we have. We also believe in the law of the harvest. What you give out, returns to you. If you give out positive, you get positive back. It may not be in the foreseeable future, but if you continue putting it out, it will come back to you. There was a French Druid back in 1792 that came up with a triad that I like to use as my mantra, the way I look at things, the way I live things. Now, a triad is a Celtic poem that has three parts. It has three items that correspond. And when I say this one triad from this French Druid, you can kind of understand. this French druid said that when everything is said and done, and we leave this world behind us, we can't take anything with us. But what we leave behind is the wisdom, the things of beauty, and love. So while we're here, learn all you can to pass wisdom and knowledge on. Work all you can to leave lasting impressions of beauty to pass on. And love, love, love. Because that's the basis of everything. And now Sarah's going to come up.
So like I said, I've been a pagan for a little over 10 years, and during that time, I have gone through a lot of different types of paganism. I've never been a Wiccan, but I have been a Hellenic Reconstructionist at one point, which is very traditional observation of ancient Greek religion. And I still feel some ties to that, but I decided that I wanted to innovate a little more than that group was comfortable with, and since then it's developed into this whole other thing. Currently, I am involved with the Pagan Friendship Circle, which is kind of an ecumenical pagan group, and also I am a devotee of the Covenant of Hecate, which is a group, an international group specifically dedicated to the study and worship of Hecate, who is the ancient Greek goddess of the crossroads, magic, and transitions, like liminal points is what they say. I want to talk a little bit about what it is in my life that I feel like makes me a pagan, because I think just going over what organizations I'm involved in really doesn't cover it. Being a pagan to me is observing the cycles of nature. I go out, I pay attention to what phase of the moon we're in. I watch the seasons change. I watch things grow. I see when they're harvested and when they go dormant for the next year. And I see that not only in the world around me, but also within my own life. I see that cycle that happens every time in everything that I do. And that's a cycle that a lot of pagans observe with the 8 annual rituals of what they call the Wheel of the Year, which include the solstices and the equinoxes, and then also 4 other holidays that are spaced kind of evenly between them. I also seek balance between the elements in my life. I do wear a pentagram. Honestly, when I got the pentagram, my intention was not anything spiritual, but mainly to let people know that I was a pagan in case they were interested. But since then, it's really been something that's helpful to me in keeping my life in balance. It's actually originally a Greek symbol, so I can relate to that. And the points of the pentagram symbolize the 5 elements of air, fire, water, earth, and spirit, which you saw when we went around the room at the beginning. Air is life of the mind. It's knowledge, learning, wisdom, everything like that in your life. Fire is the creative spark. So for me, that's creating rituals, writing, doing art, making music. Water is emotional life. So it's the part of your life involved with relationships with other people, with your family, with my husband, and everything that keeps you emotionally healthy. And then earth is the mundane things, going to work, cleaning the house, going grocery shopping, all of the things that make your life possible in the real world. And spirit, of course, is mainly what we're talking about today. So keeping those things into balance is very important to me, and so is keeping myself open to wonder. I think one of the main things that distinguishes pagans from a lot of other religious groups is their willingness to kind of open themselves to ideas and experiences that they may not understand. There's a lot of talk about magic. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in pagan ritual that is really symbolic, that you can't come up with any kind of a logical explanation for why it works, but you know that it works because you've done it. And that, I think, is something that's very distinctively pagan. So the next person who's going to talk is going to be Brittany.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Brittany Talkington, and I have been a pagan, like Larry, pretty much all of my life. I didn't start calling myself a pagan, though, until 9 years ago. I was really young when I started this path. I was only 13 years old. I'll let you do the math. To me, I am an eclectic pagan. I am just your general run-of-the-mill. I get to choose my own beliefs. I do believe in a goddess and a god, and to me, the goddess and the god are, let me start by saying this. To me, paganism is all about magic, and magic is just another word for energy. Every religion has this element to it. You can call it the Holy Spirit, as Christians do. You could call it Tao, as Taoists do, but we tend to call it magic. And science tells us that there is energy within everything. And so to me, magic is in everything. And the goddess and the god are just polarities of energy. So when I am doing ritual, to me, I am taking my own energy and connecting with the energy that is around me in the world to manifest something that I believe is right for me. To me, my path is very much based on my family. Although they don't call themselves pagans, ever since I was little, I have had this connection with my grandma, who has taught me how to deal with my energy sensitivities. She taught me how to read tarot cards with regular playing cards when I was 9 years old, and that was the thing that really got me started on this path. And to me, paganism is all about choosing what is right for myself. I take from all different types of religions. I take from Buddhism, I do Buddhist meditations. I take from Hinduism, I love doing the mandalas that they have, which is something that we actually did in our ritual last night. Thank you, Sarah. And so to me, magic is all about manifesting what I believe is right for myself in my life and accepting everyone else and what they believe is right for themselves and in their lives. So next to speak is going to be Luana Porter. She is the owner of Mystic Myths, a store and place for our community in this community.
Do what? I wasn't prepared to talk this morning, so I don't have any notes or anything. And Sarah just informed me this morning that I'd like for you to. I have a unique spin on things to me because I was raised Christian and pagan was a very dirty word around my household. When I grew up and married my husband, it was something that we didn't talk about. You know, I go to church with my family. He didn't want to go to church. He done his thing. I done mine. We didn't really talk about it. We raised our kids to be individual people. I taught them about God and about Jesus, and he taught them about nature. When they grew up, they made up their own minds. After my mother passed away and I didn't have the guilt complex of her looking me in the face and saying, "Are you saying your prayers every night?" And because I just couldn't do that to her, you know, and saying, "Oh, I'm going to other paths or searching other things," because it was so important to her. I started asking him questions and learning about things and looking around, and then all of a sudden I woke up and say, "Oh, that makes sense. You know, I've been doing that all my life. I've been looking at nature. I've been seeing the seasons. I've been worshiping trees all my life. I didn't know I was pagan. To me, paganism is an alternative to the box, the protocol, and the political aspect of religion. To me, there's a very big difference between being religious and being spiritual. Some people say that spirituality and religion are hand in hand, and some people really walk that walk. But I've seen it more times than not. A religious person is not always a spiritual person. And a spiritual person is not always religious, as in the term pagan. Pagans are not necessarily religious from what I've seen, but they are very spiritual. It's the 1970s live and let live spirit. You know, I'm not going to look down on you for doing what you do, but I want you to respect me and see what I'm doing is not wrong. At the store that I have, I have angels. I have Buddha. I have the pentagram. I have the heathen horns. I have the heathen deities. I try to incorporate everybody because I think that's what the world is everybody trying to see somebody else's point of view. Because like Larry says, you always are learning. You should always create wisdom. You should always learn from somebody. I don't think anybody is really wrong. If their opinion is different than mine, that doesn't mean that I'm going to come to your side. But it also means that I may come back and think, well, and then incorporate something that you said into my way of thinking. I believe that everybody has the right to do what they want as long as it harms none. And that's another pagan passage of the Wiccan Redo. And they say, do what you will and you harm none. That's kind of hard to do because if you harm none, that means that if you walk across your yard, you're harming the blades of grass. So that's really kind of an impossible task, to harm none. You just do what you can to harm as little as you can. And when you cut a tree down, I believe that you should replant a tree. I used to kill every spider in my house because I don't like them. And my husband comes around and he saves them and he scoops them up in a little piece of paper and he throws them out the door. And now instead of killing every spider, I either say there's a spider and let him come get it, or I just talk to the spider and say, okay, you can go outside and live your life, but when you're in my house, you're dead. So, I'll just wrap it up by saying I feel like I'm still a little Christian out of the box. I believe in one creator. I believe that something, somebody, some entity created us all. We are all brothers and sisters. Since I've been learning about paganism, I've called myself pagan now for about 6 years. The god and the goddess, to me, I can understand where they're coming from because it's the male and the female of the one. Us as humans, the male of the species has more testosterone, but they still have estrogen. We have estrogen, but we still have some testosterone. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. It's bees and flowers. Everything has a male and a female, even to the plants. Every animal has a male and a female. The pagans, when they say the god and the goddess, to me, are just acknowledging that. They're just acknowledging that there are two. It takes two to come into this life. And to me, that two come together and is the one. So when I bring the one down and here on earth separated into two, it kind of makes sense. The sun and the moon. We couldn't live without the moon. We couldn't live without the sun. We can't live without male and female of anything to recoup the species. But something made all of us. I don't, in my personal belief, I don't think that we derived from monkeys. I don't think that we were a bacteria or an amoeba somewhere that just decided to evolve over millions of years. But again, that's just my opinion.
We're going to open it up to questions now, and if you have a question that you want to address to a specific person, just please say that when you ask the question, all right?
I have a question. The word I most commonly hear in regard to pagans is Wiccan, and I haven't heard Wiccan discussed. Can you tell me something about that?
Okay, the way that I explain it is there are a lot of people who consider themselves Wiccan, but Wiccan is a smaller denomination of pagan. Pagan is a blanket term like Christian is. So Wiccan would be a denomination of that, like a Baptist would be a denomination of Christian. So believe it or not, there are actually no Wiccans here today. And that's actually, are you? Okay. Okay, so she is actually a Wiccan. And is that the way that you describe it too? Like that? Okay.
In the Wiccan tradition, we also celebrate the eight holidays of the year, which is the Wheel of the Year. In my viewpoint, it's earth-based. And like we just had one holiday, it was the Midsummer, which is the longest day and the shortest night. And that was very significant when we used to have to rely and we didn't have technology. And it's a way of keeping that mind frame and knowing where the sun is and where the earth is and what's going on in the world around us. It's, in my viewpoint, it's very keeping in terms with that. It's kind of science-based in a way, or at least how I practice it. Even though Wicca is one portion of the Blaken term, there's still many different areas within that. But we do the four elements, same as Sarah did, and the eight holidays, and it's very, it's a learning tradition. You have to be around somebody and learn it, and there's many, many, many different things to learn. So, I hope that answered.
For some that didn't mention any of the rituals that happened, could you explain a little bit? Like I understood some from the first speaker. So just some general rituals to maybe get a better of understanding how you come together as a group to help celebrate your religion in a manner that's been done for years and years. Could you explain?
So I can describe for you the ritual that we did last night for Midsummer, if you'd like. What we did last night is we gathered in that circle out there. We called the elements just like we did just now. And then we did something symbolic for each of the elements, and we lit four torches to symbolize them. And then the main part of the ritual, we talked about the significance of Midsummer, like scientifically, astronomically, what's going on at Midsummer, and also the significance of it within paganism. And then we took mandalas that were just outlines, and we each went off and we colored one in and tried to like capture that spark of the sun at the highest point of its power and give it form on paper. And then after we had done that, each of us gave our mandala to another person in the group who we felt like could use that power in their own life. And so we're keeping them now in our homes so that we can look at them. And that was the Midsummer ritual. The basic format for like a generic pagan ritual is you call the elements, you invoke the god and the goddess, you do something that you want to do, which is kind of like, you know, the sermon part of a church service. You do your work. And then you have a little ritual meal, and then you close out the circle. Does that answer your question? Okay.
I'm Ann Cowan. Many years ago, when I went to a General Assembly meeting of the Unitarian Universalist Association, I attended a pagan gathering, and it was at that time just forming as part of the UU Association, and they're sort of come under the umbrella of UUA. Do any of you work within the UU Association and their support for pagan groups?
Actually. Okay, I can answer that question too. Are you talking about the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans?
I guess so. When I went, it was just forming, and I don't know what's happened to it.
Yeah, I think it formed in like, I don't know, maybe 2005-ish, somewhere around there. Maybe a little earlier. I'm aware of that group. I actually was involved in CUPS groups in Omaha and in Riverside. And I know there's been talk of starting one here, but we have kind of a disproportionate number of people who are not UUs in the group. So we've decided to kind of keep it independent for the time being and just contribute to the fellowship when we can. But we're aware that it exists.
I'd like to say I'm thrilled to hear, although I'm not surprised, but I'm thrilled to hear your individual messages of tolerance and acceptance of lots of worldviews. But as people who are tolerant and accepting, what are your personal strategies for fitting in and places like Kansas?
Okay, it's somebody else's turn.
Just my personal view on it. I think if you live that life of honor, that your deeds kind of speak for themselves. If you show people you're honorable and that you are an important part of your community, that kind of speaks for itself. And is, I mean, you can make your stand about being tolerant about people, but if you don't walk the walk also, that doesn't really mean anything. So I think if you both speak about it to people and show through your deeds that you're a good person and have a good life, then that kind of speaks for itself. That's kind of my strategy. Is there anyone else?
I actually choose to be open about what I believe because I want to hear what other people believe. And a lot of the times, if you approach someone else and say, well, what is it that you believe, and hear their side of things first, it's a lot easier to find things in common that way. So I listen to what other people say that they believe in, and I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of like this, and this is what I believe, and then I tell them that I'm pagan. So they get to know me first, and then I let them know.
Kind of focus on the commonalities.
Yeah, I like to focus on the commonalities because with paganism, there's a lot of commonalities with just about every religion. You can find some aspect of our belief system in just about every belief system. So,
I'm really happy to hear your presentation, and I'm really struck by your your bearing, your personal bearing, your emanate kindness, and the, I don't know, you're just very open, and it makes me feel really happy. I'm not a really very a smiley person, but I realized I was smiling when you were talking. And I admire that you love nature, and it's so important that we realize that we're, one of my favorite UU principles is that we recognize we're part of the interconnected web of life. I'm sure that's one of the ones you can relate to that we believe in. And thanks for coming here and being open, and it's a gamble to put yourself out like this. I really appreciate it and admire you.
I'm Pat Embers, and I'm interested in everything you're saying, and I'd really like to learn more. I think I've discovered, with the help of Michael Nelson, our minister, that I really am a pagan, and I'm what was called, I don't know for sure if this is true, but I'm sort of an out of the box old Christian too, from way back. And there are certain things I still accept and so forth. But I have a strong leaning towards Native American spirituality, and I would like to hear if that fits in or how that is in your pagan beliefs.
The Native American spirituality is so close to pagan beliefs. The Celtic, the Druidic beliefs, and the Native American beliefs, they both believed in vision quest. They both believed in sweat lodges. They both revered nature. So yes, Native American is falls under the pagan umbrella. And if you're interested, if you want to know, if you just want to talk, this is kind of a plug in our back. July 16th, Mystic Myths will be open at 2026 Tuttle Creek Boulevard. Come down, and we'll talk to you. We'll sit down and we'll talk to you, try to answer questions. Yep.
Okay. Also keep in mind, though, that Native Americans, not all of them will be accepting of the pagan label. There are a lot of groups that are sometimes included under the pagan umbrella that people don't necessarily self-identify as pagans. So if you do broach the topic with someone, just be tactful.
I think what she was wanting to mention is that also the Germanic peoples, the Scandinavian peoples, and the Celts were kind of like cousins. They shared a lot of belief and culture between them. Is that right? Okay.
I heard someone mention Hellenic reconstruction, and I was kind of intrigued. Could someone maybe talk a little about that? Is it focused on the deities, or is there something else to it?
Hellenic Reconstructionism is the kind of a revival of ancient Greek pagan religion. So worship of like the Olympian gods, Zeus, Athena, Hera, you know, all the ones that you've heard of from mythology. And that worship is according to the practices that, as best as we can find out, were actually used by people in ancient Greece. And it involves a lot of research. So it is kind of a not for everybody, but there's some communities, like it's a really kind of a small sect of paganism. They tend to believe, they're hard polytheists, like Ralph was talking about, you know, believing that each of the gods is a separate and individual person. And mainly what the religious practice consists of is making offerings to the gods and asking them for blessings. It's a reciprocity thing. Does that answer your question? Okay.
My question's a little, how does your faith system, whatever that might be in the pagan umbrella, inform your political action? Because so much what we see in Christianity, there is this tradition that, you know, some believe that you're saved by faith, others believe you have to also have good works contributed to you in order to find salvation, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. And here in the United States, that has bred a certain type of reactionary political thought. And so how does your faith influence your political ideologies?
Okay, because I have a reverence for nature and I have a reverence for everyone having the ability to choose what is correct for them, I am an environmentalist. I want to take care of the thing that I worship, and I worship nature, so of course I want to protect it. And I kind of advocate for like gay rights and things like that, because I believe that even though that's not the path that I choose to take, I think that everyone should have the ability to take their own path. So that's the way that it influences me.
I kind of look at it from my ancestral point of view. If you look at the all thing in ancient Iceland, they had the first form of parliamentary government in the world. And so I really believe that that our system could work if the people we elect actually represented us correctly, you know. So that kind of ties into how I feel about the political side of it. But there is kind of a whole spectrum of political belief within heathen thought. Does that kind of answer your question?
From my studies over the years, I've become aware that in some way, shape, or form, metaphysics is a part of a lot of pagan practices. To your knowledge, what is the most advancements in metaphysics in the pagan community as pertaining to mainstream science and actually being validated as an actual science, and how is it becoming more and more important in each of your individual pagan belief systems?
That's a hard question.
In metaphysical beliefs, we do a lot of work with herbs. The more science learns, the more they go back to the herbs. Some of the cancer treatments that they've got now is herbal. That's been around for thousands of years. But now it's actually being studied and documented and saying, wow, this works. Aromatherapy. Psychologists are agreeing that certain smells release chemicals in the brain to change the way you feel. Massage therapist uses stones and crystals to help their massages, to help you feel better. It's getting more and more mainstream. Aromatherapy, herbal supplements, the crystals. And that's just because science is proven that what people's been saying hundreds of years actually work. One thing is, I'm a smoker. I've tried to stop. But I've been told that there's an herb out there called lobelia, that you drink a glass of tea of it a day, it relieves all cravings for nicotine. And when you go to a doctor, they would tell you the same thing. So, yes, it is becoming more mainstream and more recognized that the metaphysical side does have basis in fact.
Hi, this is not really a question, just a comment. And I just wanted to say how much, again, echo appreciation of listening to different views, because what really strikes me is, amongst the diversity of different beliefs, you know, what your actual beliefs are, and, you know, polytheistic or not, or, you know, the way crystals work or anything else like that, and, you know, go throughout the whole room here. There are different beliefs in Unitarian Universalism. We all have kind of different kinds of rituals we pay attention to, right? But that what strikes me is that the core, the kinds of things that we're all looking for are very similar, right? The sort of centering ourselves, being happy, being friendly, you know, being finding a way to keep balance in our lives. And, you know, we each do this in different ways. But that's what I kept on hearing in all of you speaking and, you know, what other people are saying too. And so I love hearing different ways people find of achieving that. So thanks.
Okay, I see we're getting close to the magic time where we all turn into pumpkins. So I would like to wrap this up with those chants that we were doing before. I know I told you that we would do those in a round, and it is that time. Do any of you guys want to, like, lead a section? Do you feel comfortable with it? Stephanie, do you want to lead a section? Okay, never mind. It's all me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to divide you guys into sections. And it looks like, all right, if you are sitting in the third chair and that way, you are in section one. If you're sitting in these two or these first four here, you're in section two. And then the last part, you're in section three, okay? You got it? Everyone hold up fingers for what section you're in. Okay. All right, that looks good. So section one, you guys are going to be doing the Ancient Mother chant. So everybody else, close your ears. So you guys remember how that goes? Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I hear your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears. All right. And you guys are going to be doing Mother, I Feel You here in the middle, group two. So, Mother, I feel you under my feet. Mother, I hear your heartbeat. Hey-ya, 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 yeah, hey-ya, hey-ya, ho. Hey-ya, 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 ho. And then section three, you're going to be doing on the dusty earth drum. So, on the dusty earth drum beats the falling rain. Now a whisper murmur, now a louder strain. Okay, I'm going to move that up a bit because I think that's a little too low for everybody. So what we're going to do is we're going to start over here, and you guys are going to sing through Ancient Mother once. Then we're going to add in your song, and we're going to add in your song, and then we're going to go through the whole thing twice, and then we're going to end. You're only singing the first verse, so don't worry about any other verses, okay? All right, let's start here. Ancient Mother, I hear you calling. Ancient Mother, I hear your song. Ancient Mother, I feel your laughter. Ancient Mother, I taste your tears. Keep going. Mother, I feel you under my feet. Mother, I hear your heartbeat. Hey-ya, 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 yeah, hey-ya, hey-ya, ho. Hey-ya, 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 ho. On the dusty earth drum meets the falling rain. Okay, we've lost it. We've totally lost it. You want to start over? I'm going to help the second section. Heya, 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 heya. That didn't work. Okay, you've just learned something about paganism right now, because this is about 98% of paganism, because we don't have, you know, a tradition of, we have a huge book that we can read, and we have churches, and we have years of history. We don't have that, so most of what we do, we try new things, and we see if they work, and if they don't work, then we don't do them anymore. So I'm going to say that this is a thing that doesn't work. I have done this before with a larger group of people who sing a lot, but do you want to try it again?
If we have a leader for each section.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's why I asked you.
Or I can do the middle section if you want.
Yes? What's that? You're going to lead that one? Okay. Do you want this microphone?
I don't think I
need. Oh, okay. It has to fit with the, it actually has more words, so it has to fit in the same thing. It should match. Let me take a look at it. Okay, you're right, I am doing it twice as fast. That's probably the problem. I stand corrected.
The tempo note of the top that is much faster than the mention, but since you're calling your skills.
Okay, maybe we need someone to like clap quarter notes. Maybe that would solve this problem. We need a drum. That's good. Let's do that. Okay, you start. You do a whole one by yourself. Okay, so let's close this out. Element of Air, thank you for your presence here. Hail and farewell. Element of Fire, thank you for your presence here. Hail and farewell. Element of Water, thank you for your presence here. Hail and farewell. Element of Earth, thank you for your presence here. Hail and farewell.